Welcome to Media Meeting. I'm Dawn Morgan. On the night of Sunday, October 1st, a gunman opened fire on a crowd of concertgoers at the Route 91 Harvest Music Festival on the Las Vegas Strip in Nevada, leaving 58 people dead and 851 injured in the worst mass shooting in the history of the United States. And a Hobbs, New Mexico man was there. And not just any man, but the chief of police of Hobbs Police Department was close to the stage when the shooting broke out. And with us now is Chief McCall to set the scene and tell us about that horrific night. What took place? What were you guys doing? You and your wife were there, is that right?
We were there. We've attended that Route 91 Music Festival for the last couple of years, and we've actually met some folks at that event that we meet up with there every year. They're from different parts of the country. Just so happens both of them are police officers. You know, nothing planned. We just ran into each other in the crowd at one of those events and started talking. And we've kind of each year met there and hung out during that event. And that's kind of what we were doing that night. We had changed our routine as what we normally do. Normally we're down in the crowd up near the front of the stage so that we have the best view available of whatever act is on the stage, and we've always enjoyed that. I guess our age is catching up with us, and our legs and feet and everything were hurting by the second day or the third day of the concert, so we had decided to move into pay extra to move into a VIP section where there was some seating available. And, you know, that decision, I think, definitely most likely saved our lives, because the area that we were normally would have been in suffered very heavy casualties and lots of injuries down in that dense portion of the crowd. It really makes you think, you know, the small decisions that you make in your life really, really can determine your future.
Yeah, absolutely. So what you were there, enjoying the concert. It was, you know, what was going on when you first realized that there was something out of the ordinary going on and not just a great concert, you know, and right. That you were enjoying with your wife?
Well, you know, I guess I could start this with about 9:55, my wife and I took a selfie photo of ourselves, and in the background you could see the stage, and behind that you could see Mandalay Bay. I look at that photo now and I think about who's looking out that 32nd floor window and what he's about to do in about 6 minutes. And it really strikes home. And we were standing on kind of an elevated platform in that area that that I described. It wasn't really bleachers. It was more of a solid platform that was built from steel. We were standing on that. We heard a couple of shots go off. It sounded away from the actual event, maybe like out in the street or out in a parking lot across the street. Initially, not very concerned. One of the individuals we were there with went, "Oh, did you hear those fireworks?" I said, "Those weren't fireworks. Those were gunshots." recognized those immediately. And then a few seconds later, the automatic gunfire started. We all kind of looked at each other. It took a brief second to sink in that, yeah, that really was automatic gunfire. And at that point, from our vantage point, we were above the crowd. So we could see that crowd start to move, almost look like a school of fish is what I would describe how a school of fish moves, because they're just packed in so tight. And we recognized there was something very bad happening. We realized that we needed to get down. We got down on our stomachs and tried to assess what was happening. Figured out after a couple volleys of automatic gunfire that this was not something that was going to stop. We needed to get to cover, real cover. We crawled on our stomachs down up underneath that elevated platform. Just as we got under there, I looked at the friend of mine that was from California. He's a police officer, and he looked at me. I said, "We're in a better spot." He gave me the thumbs up, said, "Yeah, we're in a much better spot here." We no more said that than we could hear the bullets striking the platform above us where we had just been. And we looked at each other then and said, "No, we need to move. We got to get out of here. That's getting closer." So we made the decision that when we heard, by this time we could tell there were pauses, most likely a reload is what I thought, in the gunfire. Told my wife and the people around us, I said, when the next time that pauses, we need to get down these steps. We need to get out in the way. We had initially discussed with our friends we were going to go to the airport because it was very close. I said, you know, they'll secure that airport. You know, we get there, we're going to be safe. But we were able to, once the next pause occurred in the shooting, we were able to get down some steps and through a hole in the fence and out a gate onto the street. From that point, each time the gunfire started, we would find cover and stay at cover and then move to another location until the shooting started again, and we would stop and take cover again. Finally found cover in a parking garage and stayed there for a little bit. I made a phone call to Brian Dunlap, actually here, and asked him to wake up and turn on the news and tell me where things were happening so that we didn't move to a location that may put us in more danger. So I was trying to get information from the news or from the media that may have been starting to report on it, where those locations or what was going on. Initially, he was unable to find anything. He said, I don't know what you're talking about. There's nothing going on. About 5 minutes later, he said, oh, yeah, it looks like it's all around you, because they were repeating the reports that were coming off of the strip and from the hotels. So, you know, we came out of that fine. We ran into some folks and helped them along the way. One of the ladies that we stopped and helped, she was a little hysterical. She was kind of in shock. We found her at a little apartment complex as we fled down an alley away from the venue. She was kind of ducked down in a corner, kind of shaking. And under normal circumstances, I don't think she would have taken cover in that apartment complex, because it looked pretty sketchy itself. So so we moved away from that area and took her with us. Turned out that her fiance was the commander for the Los Angeles Police Department's Hollywood Division of Homicide. So it was a strange thing that those connections that we kept making. Even once we left the parking garage to take her to her friend, who she had been separated from, she was in a room in the MGM. So we were almost directly across the street from the MGM at that time. We went into a back door and up to the room that her friend had been taken to. And the people that were in that room, that occupied that room, were police officers from California as well. So it was a strange law enforcement connection throughout the night that went on. But we were able to get out of that and get back to our hotel. Several hours later, we crossed the strip. It was very eerie. There was no one out. There was no traffic on the strip. You could see all the red and blue lights where they had intersections blocked, but nobody moving. They had it on a lockdown, and a very strange sight when you're used to seeing the crowds there.
Yeah. So you guys, you heard gunshots, and you, as a police officer, you knew immediately that there were shots, even though they sounded at a distance. You heard gunshots. You saw the crowds reacting to the gunfire and, I guess, to the some of the people who were being shot. Did you see people getting shot? Did you actually, I know you heard the shots, did you see people go down from gunfire?
From where we were, you couldn't tell if they were falling because of the crowd or if they were falling because they were being struck by gunfire. Our experience, my wife and I, our experience compared to some friends of ours who were literally 10 seconds behind us coming down those steps that I described that came out of the area what we were in, was dramatically different. We went through the hole in the fence, and they were 10 seconds behind us coming down those steps. And as they got to the bottom of those steps, an individual came out who had been wounded in the head and was bleeding profusely, and they stopped to help him, wrapped his head with some T-shirts and some things that they had bought at the concert, and took him outside to a police car and put him in a police car, and that police officer took that person to the hospital. From there, they turned around, and another wounded woman stumbled out. She was wounded badly in the stomach. Truck was coming by. They literally stopped that truck. The back of that truck was already full of people who were wounded. They threw her into the back of that truck as it was speeding away. So they had a very different experience than we did in what they saw, and it was literally a matter of seconds that separated what our experiences were.
Wow. And it would seem natural that your experience as a police officer, your training and background in that, how did that create a different experience for you during that shooting than for other for so-called, you know, civilian folks?
Yeah, you know, I don't know. I would say I was probably just as scared and I guess some of the things that we did were probably influenced by my training. I mean, we knew we had to get to cover. We knew when we got to cover that it probably wasn't sufficient. So we made the decision that we needed to move. We knew that we wanted to bound, move from cover to cover as the gunfire was going on. So those were probably things that were influenced from my training. I think as far as the experience itself, I was probably just as terrified as everybody else there. It was an experience. You know, when you're a police officer, you're on duty, you're in uniform or on duty and equipped, you know what your responsibility and response to a situation like that is going to be. When you're in a relaxed state, you're not at work, you're not expecting something like that, it's a very different experience.
So you definitely had that moment of, this is not a drill, you know?
Yeah, it probably only took a few seconds or split seconds, but it seemed like an eternity in your mind as you're trying to assess and realize that yes, this is really happening, and we really need to do something.
It's a real test, though, when you look back at that experience now. This is, it kind of equates to sports. You play like you practice.
Right.
All right. And when you're in a situation where you're and now it's time to perform in a game or you tend to rely on muscle memory and you let your training take over. Is that kind of the same way in here?
I would say so. The you were trained under gunfire. If you're moving to bound, what we call bounding, moving from cover location to cover location. Okay. And I guess subconsciously, that's kind of what we did.
When they got the guy, when they got him, when they identified him, and when facts came out about the shooter himself, what did you feel? What did you feel?
I was at a, obviously the confusion of why, kind of like everybody else, why did this guy do this? What is his motivation? And the fact that to this day we don't really know why he did this is a little frustrating. I mean, as a police officer, law enforcement officer, that's part of what we do is try to figure out what the reason for a crime is. Why did this occur and how did it occur? And I think we have the how, we don't have the why, and likely never will. That's kind of a frustrating part of that whole storyline that will probably carry on forever.
There's got to be frustration there, but there had to have been some anger. I mean, this guy, he could have shot you, he could have killed you, he could have shot your wife, he could have killed her. I mean, that knowledge, thinking of, there's one thing of going through that experience, and then another, for all that to kind of come home. I mean, there's got to be, you feel some anger about that you can't really do anything about.
Oh yeah, in the profession I am, you always want to do more. I would have loved to have been one of those guys going down the hall to remedy that situation. For someone to put myself, my wife, friends, and just, 22,000 other total strangers in that type of peril. When I got off the plane in Midland, media met us there, and one of the ladies asked me, something about was surely that my law enforcement training had prepared me for such an incident. I said, you realize we just lived through the largest mass shooting in U.S. history. I don't know that there's anything to compare that to. I don't think that there's a preparation for that. So it definitely has its effects and lessons. You try to drag from those things. Being in my profession, you always want to look at those and try to learn from them and implement what we can here. And it's for me recently in our conversations in regards to school safety and what we're doing in regards to active threats to the schools and working with the schools. A lot of what I experienced, I think, is influencing, some of what my input is into those plans and the thoughts of how we're going to approach that should that ever occur.
Thank you, Hobbs Police Chief Chris McCall, a survivor of the worst mass shooting in U.S. history. I'm Dawn Morgan. Thank you for listening to Meaty Meeting.